Welcome to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, licensed in Bella Vista, California, and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance are brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradled lives. But for whatever reasons, guests will openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. Today's guest, Southern California born Alita. Earliest, most vivid memory is of being chased by a rooster at her grandpa's house in Anderson, California. Did this chase somehow foreshadow her a future as a lobbyist, where she turned the tables, chasing down votes from legislators at the California State Capitol and meeting and hobnobbing with governors and other well-known politicians? Alita's early life was fraught with adversity: an alcoholic biological father, a parental divorce causing a separation from her mother as a result of a devastating illness. But a move to Shasta County, her mother's remarriage, and adoption by her stepfather led to stability and idyllic upbringing. Academics always came easy to her. She could read before she went to school, never went to kindergarten, and skipped third grade. She learned how to read music and taught herself to play the piano. Her mother was instrumental in guiding Alita's curiosity and values, leading to a lifetime fascination with different ethnicities, cultural and languages, along with the belief that she never be restricted to traditional roles because of her gender. Please listen to this heartfelt story. Alita Carpenter, welcome to today's show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, my goodness. What an exciting opportunity to speak with you, Alita. You have so many varied interests persistently your whole life, skipping school, starting out. I'm really impressed.
Oh, thank you. It's been an interesting life. I feel very fortunate.
My goodness, meeting with one of our past presidents and governors. There's just so much to talk about here, Alita. How would you define yourself?
Oh, that's so tough. I've been...
I don't think so.
No, I've been so many people over the course of the years.
How do you define your life?
My life? Non-traditional, I would say.
Well,
I
mean, you know... Sure. That's for sure. That's for sure.
I was just a kid in Anderson, a bright kid who did well in school. And it's not like I grew up thinking... I want to grow up and be a lobbyist and work in politics. I mean, that never even crossed my mind.
Well, it's going to be an amazing story to tell us how that all happened. My goodness sakes.
Well, it just kind of fell that way. I mean, I can't explain it. It's kind of partly just trying to prepare myself for as much as possible in life. I always wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. So, like in high school, I took the traditional college prep courses. But then for my elective courses, I took business courses. Mm-hmm. So I'd be prepared. I knew how to type. I can still take shorthand. Mm-hmm. And
do you use your shorthand?
All the time.
Yeah, what an instrument, isn't it?
Oh, I have been so grateful for having that knowledge. I used to sit in legislative hearings when I was a lobbyist, and I would write down verbatim what the opponents had to say about our legislation, type it up, send it off to our clients, and we were always well prepared for anything that would come up because of my great note-taking.
Alita, do they still teach shorthand?
No, they don't.
They don't.
No, I've had so many people ask me if I could teach them, and I have a book, Greg's Shorthand Book.
Oh, yeah, I remember the Greg's.
Greg, right. Uh-huh. But it's a matter of just learning the different symbols for phonetics and then just building up speed from that point on.
Have you ever really given serious thought of teaching shorthand? I'll tell you, I would take it. I would take a course from you.
I don't know. The people who've seen me do it, when I went back to school at a much later time in my life, mm-hmm. I'd sit in lecture halls and take notes in shorthand, and then I would type them up and share them with my study group.
Right.
Oh, we did so well in school.
Okay. Tell us about your experiences in Sacramento.
Ah, okay. Well, I grew up here and went to work for the state after high school. I went to Shasta College for a short time and then went to work for the state, transferred within state service to Sacramento, mm-hmm. and wound up handling the legislation for one of the state agencies that kind of gave me entree into the field. Mm-hmm. I applied for a position in the legislative office for Los Angeles schools, and one of the interviewers was with San Francisco, and he offered me the same position after the interview, and it paid more than LA did. So you took it. I took the job, mm-hmm. and then eventually the superintendent of schools in San Francisco recognized that I was actually the one who was getting the work done. The person who was the director was a typical school administrator, mm-hmm. And he was, I guess, he was a little timid, mm-hmm. and I wasn't. So I made friends with legislators and legislative staff, and whenever I needed to have something done, I'd just run over and talk to my friends. And eventually, the superintendent recognized that, and he promoted me, and I wound up the director of legislation for San Francisco schools.
That's a key position.
Well, it is. And then in 1974, when the Fair Political Practices Act was passed, it required all lobbyists to register with the state. And I discovered that there were only a dozen of us female lobbyists.
Versus how many of the other gender, meaning men?
Yes, close to 500.
You got to be kidding.
No. And these days, many, many more lobbyists of both genders are.
Well,
are
you registered. probably broke the ice.
I did, and it's really exciting to be considered a forerunner, uh-huh. of all that's transpired. Women in general, and here I'm speaking from my communication background.
Sure,
women in general are better at assessing the nonverbals.
You mean like body language and
body
senses?
Body language, yes. Uh-huh. And so they make excellent lobbyists, because I remember taking some of our clients in to talk to a legislator, and lots of the clients were intent on showing exactly how much they knew about a given subject. Mm-hmm. And I noticed the second that a legislator's eyes would start to glaze over. They said, "Thank you very much, Senator. We appreciate your time.
Get out of here."
Get out of here. Right. Yeah. It's a knack that we women can capitalize
on. I think there's probably truth to that. My wife can answer a question before I ask it. Right?
My kind of woman.
So you say that you never had a vision of being in politics or
never.
So what did you ever dream about as a younger age? What was your first thought of something that you wanted to be when you grew up?
I thought I'd like to teach. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, much, much later in life, when I was getting my master's, I was offered the opportunity, and I absolutely loved it. It was wonderful. I taught public speaking, which is a class that everyone hates, but everyone must take in order to graduate. To get their bachelor's degree.
I see.
It's a required course. Mm-hmm. And so, because as a lobbyist, I was required to speak in public, and I was never really comfortable with it, I had decided that I would make my kids comfortable. I would do everything I could to give them a measure of comfort, mm-hmm. in speaking in public. So I developed all of these different games that they would play, and so they all got to know one another. I'd break up the groups and make them sit with different people, so they all became friends. And my classes looked like the United Nations. I mean, seriously, I had students from all over the world. So they had three speeches, a demonstration, an informative speech, and a persuasive speech. So for their demonstration, I would tell them.
What grade level was this?
This is college.
College,
yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh,
mm-hmm.
University level.
Okay.
And the students were anywhere from freshmen to seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And seniors put off this public speaking class as long as
possible. Well, most people have a number one fear.
Oh, I know, I know.
Of speaking.
Not my kids. I told them, okay, demonstrate something you already know how to do.
Uh-huh.
So they were comfortable doing that because they're just, you know, they're talking to a bunch of their friends and showing their friends how to do something. Secondly, I'd tell them, okay, we're from a diversity of cultures in this room. Tell us something for your informative speech. Tell us something about your culture. And so we had the most interesting speeches on one girl told us about her quinceañera for her 15th birthday.
15th birthday, sure.
Right.
Hispanic.
Right. A guy from, a student from the Arab Emirates told us about Ramadan. We had a student, for a demonstration speech. This was my absolute favorite. One of my students from Fiji did a haka. You know the...
No, I don't know what a haka is.
Oh, that's the Maori dance.
Tell us what a haka is.
A haka is a dance where they march and stomp their feet and beat their chests and stick their tongues out and make frightening noises.
Like they do in Hawaii?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very similar.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Pacific Islanders.
Oh, I see.
That was my absolute favorite demonstration of any of my students. And then by the time they got to the persuasive speech, they were very, very comfortable.
You know, you had said that one of your earliest recollections of what you wanted to do for the future was to teach. You were involved in so many boards of directors.
Yes, I am.
Don't you really think that people learn just by associating themselves with you? And I guess the point that I'm thinking of is that you teach anyway.
I do. I
mean,
feel
somebody
that I
sitting
do.
Next to you, watching how you speak and how you explain things. I mean, that's a learnable thing.
Well, it's been interesting because some of the boards that I'm on, for example, the Tobacco Education Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the. What would you call me?
Tell us about that.
Oh, it's a terrific group. I mean, I've been working with them. When I came back up to Shasta County, I went to work for public health. And one of my roles at public health was to be the tobacco cessation program coordinator. And mm-hmm. I've always been anti-tobacco. And
You never smoked?
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
And Daddy did, unfortunately, for a while, but he had four kids who referred to them as bad cigarettes. It was like we taught the next one down the line that it was all one word, bad cigarettes.
Bad cigarettes.
Okay. Bad cigarettes. Anyway, we work very hard at educating the community as to the health impacts of smoking, not on just on yourself, but on those around you.
Secondhand smoke.
Third-hand smoke.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, these days we've switched our attention to other problems that are cropping up with electronic cigarettes and Juuls.
Like vaping.
Yes. So what I do in my capacity as communications coordinator for this group is to keep the group advised on current legislation that's pending at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I usually give an informative speech to all of them coming in explaining how the capital works. Okay, first a bill is introduced, then it has to wait 30 days, it goes to the Rules Committee for assignment, go through the whole how a bill becomes law.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that respect, yes, I am teaching.
Oh, there's
still.
No question about it. Absolutely,
yeah.
No question about it.
Yeah, that one I specifically teach. I also, I'm on the board at CHIBA, the California Heritage Youth Build Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And after spending time out there, I said, you know, I'd like to develop a course for the kids here. So I developed a course called Human Communication, and I incorporated aspects of public speaking, conflict resolution, dyadic communication, one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. And the kids really enjoyed it, too. And several of them told me after the class was over that they felt that I had given them tools for dealing with relationships in their lives.
It can't get much better than that.
No.
You have a internal compelling mechanism that makes you continue, because you are retired, isn't that correct?
If you can call it that. Yes, I'm retired. I serve on 4 local boards, 1 state board, and 1 national board.
My goodness sakes, really? So tell us, we're going to go back and we're going to go back to your childhood, but what is the compellingness that makes you continue to spread your knowledge and your experiences of your life? I mean, you have a full plate already. I can just see that. But what is the compelling drive that makes you do this?
Bettering the lives of women. That has been what has motivated me my entire life. I had this extraordinary mother who would do anything. She was fearless, absolutely fearless. And just more by actions than anything else, she taught us that we didn't have barriers or boundaries. We could, if I wanted to build a wall, I could build a wall. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to replumb a toilet, I could do that, and, mm-hmm. and I have done so. But growing up here, you see incidents of domestic abuse, and you see how a lack of education and a lack of resources has impacted women's lives over the years. And equality is just something that has propelled me, in not just in the workplace, but in life in general. Every one of the boards that I serve on, mm-hmm. in some way, helps women and their families.
Well, that's a marvelous statement, unquestionably. So that little flame just continues to glow and burn and move forward.
It does. It's interesting because with the recent focus on women's marches, mm-hmm. My granddaughter, she was 15 last year for the first women's march. And so
she's 15.
And she wanted to march.
She's taken after somebody, huh?
Oh, she definitely is. I'm so proud of her. So we carried signs, and mine said, "Marching since 1970, now marching with my granddaughter."
Oh, good for you.
With an arrow pointing to her. She had to keep changing sides to make sure that the arrow pointed the right way.
Isn't that cute? You know, I just we have to take a break in a minute. But I just read an article this morning where spelling is no longer part of curriculum.
Oh.
In schools, which I'm just shocked to read this. But I'd sure like your perspective on this after our break. And so we're going to take our quick break right now and just think about that. And I just want to know what you think about that. I'm flabbergasted that there could be – this is already in process.
I'm not surprised. I'm appalled, but I'm not surprised.
Absolutely. You are listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN, Community Supported Radio. And I'm Henry Cuenca, and we are going to take a short break. For those of you just joining us, this is the Henry Cuenca Show, and my guest today is Alida Carpenter. And we're talking about Alida's life, which has been rambunctious, and it never seems to stop.
It's pretty long, too, actually.
I had asked you before the break to think about this. I read that just this morning in the Washington Post, that spelling is no longer part of the curriculum, and there's no need for it because you have autocorrect.
Oh, and you've seen some of the examples of autocorrect, haven't you?
Oh, well, I flub on it all the time. And they say the examples of notoriety of high-end people, a president of the United States on down, misspelling. Misspelling is texting is acceptable.
It's not acceptable.
I don't
for
think
me.
So either, but I'm shocked.
I am too. And you know, I hate to see that happen. I've always, I know it's, this is just part of my mental heritage, but English has always been very easy for me, and I think I've only misspelled maybe three words in my whole life. I have kind of like a eidetic memory.
Eidetic imagery.
Yes, yeah. And so I remember words. Mm-hmm. And it's been a big help in editing, because I do a lot of editing. Mm-hmm. And I look at some of the things that I'm asked to edit. I'm astounded at the way people spell things. And I hate to see spelling fall by the wayside, well, but it's technology.
You must have seen some of my notes or something.
I have seen a couple of your notes, and I wondered, let's see, dawning, what does that mean?
but to some extent, I'm very fortunate because my wife has a master's degree from Santa Clara University in reading. So when I have the chance and she's around, I'll ask her to proof my stuff.
My husband does the same with me.
Does he really?
He does. And he has a master's in English as a second language undergrad in English.
Well, then I don't feel so bad.
My nope. Good.
I just want my wife to correct it. Don't give me a lesson. I don't want a lesson. I don't have time for an English lesson.
Just
fix the problem. You have a master's, a couple of degrees. Tell us about your educational accomplishments.
Well, as I said, academics always came easy to me. And I went, after high school, I went to Shasta College for about a semester or so, and then just kind of went off to make a life. When I was approaching my 50th birthday, I thought, you know, I'd really like to finish school.
So what you're saying is that you did not have...
I had a basic high school diploma from Anderson High School.
At age 50 or thereabouts?
Yeah, and I had
And a year and a half at Shasta College?
Not even a year and a half, just maybe one semester.
Okay, tell us about that.
Well, I hadn't really... I don't know, it's like no one ever required that I have beyond that, because I was a quick study. I understood how to get things done. I was a lobbyist with people who had degrees, law degrees, masters. I felt as though I really needed to complete my education. And I don't know if other women are the same, but it's like with every decade birthday, I kind of reevaluate my life. What have I done? Where am I going?
Do you still do that?
I do, yes, which is why I'm so busy in retirement, because when I turned 70, I thought, what else can I do? So
amazing.
Approaching 50, I thought, you know, it's time. So I went back to school and took classes for a couple of spring semesters. The legislature mm-hmm. was in session during the spring, mm-hmm. and so it made it easy to go to Sacramento State. And then I decided to get serious about it. So in the year 2000, I finished my bachelor's degree. I graduated summa cum laude with a 9.98 GPA.
Nice.
And then I took a semester off and got certified in public relations and conflict resolution and mediation. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, I really should just go ahead and get a master's too. So I did. And
were you working at the time?
At that point, I was working part-time. Mm-hmm. I had eased out of politics in the 90s. I just, after 25-plus years, you know, I couldn't be nice anymore. Mm. It just was so difficult to deal with the massive egos and the whole Me Too
sure.
movement that's,
yeah,
that's
sure.
come to light. This is something that as a young pretty attractive young kid. Mm-hmm. Well, I wasn't a kid. I was a woman in my 20s. But fending off the advances of those in power and still managing to remain friends with them was a constant juggling act.
And because of the ego type thing?
Oh, of course.
That's it, huh?
I think that many of them felt that it was kind of like a perk of office.
Mm-hmm.
And so... That was a constant.
You know, Alita, you've met with, know of, four or five governors, president of the, President Reagan.
Well, he was a governor.
So you worked with five or six California governors.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Who stands out as the most charitable?
Charitable.
I don't know if that's the right word.
Probably the most real.
I guess that's what I'm trying to
say. George Duke Majan. Nothing changed him. He was exactly the person he was when he was in the Senate. My former late husband was a senator also, and he and George Duke Majan shared desks on the Senate floor. And he was a lovely man, just unaffected, generous, warm, kind.
So he was easy to work with, I would presume.
He was very easy to work with, yes.
He passed away, did he not?
I believe he did,
yeah,
yes.
I think he did.
Yes, many of them have. I loved Reagan. He was just one of the most charming men I've ever met in my life.
Really?
Just when he talked to you, it's as though no one else existed. That eye contact.
One-on-one.
Yeah, he and Bill Clinton were absolutely, they had the charm dialed down, I'll tell you.
And what was the occasion that you met President Clinton?
Oh, it was in between his governorships. It was in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Of course, Arkansas is an adjacent state.
Sure.
And I'd gone to a grand opening, and he was one of the guests there. And it was in between his terms as governor of Arkansas.
You have an interest in art.
I do.
And you did serve on a council of art?
I do. I'm the vice president of American Women Artists.
Tell us about that.
Well, I've always been an art collector. Everyone in our family has certain capabilities in the artistic arena. Mm-hmm. I've always grown to love and appreciate the arts, and at being a collector, I've come to know the various artists whose work I collected.
Do you draw, or are you an artist yourself?
I would never call myself an artist, but yes, I can draw.
is it drawing what you do? Drawing? Painting or watercolor?
I don't do it. It's just one of those things. It's like a talent that I have that I don't get around to utilizing, kind of like playing the piano.
So you just appreciate art?
Yeah, oh, very much so, yes.
Enough to get you in this position to promote art with women.
Well, here we go back to my promoting women. This is something that people just really aren't aware of, but if you look at the permanent collections of museums throughout the United States, actually throughout the world, between 1% to 5% of their holdings are made by female artists.
That's almost like the legislative lineup of 500 men to 13 or 11.
Exactly, which I am determined to change any way possible.
Have you made any headway in that
area?
Oh,
definitely, yes. With American Women Artists, we have our 25 and 25 goal. And what this is, instead of having gallery shows where people buy the art, we have museum shows where the museum is bound by the agreement to have the show there to purchase at least one of the items for their permanent collection. Mm-hmm. So far, we've had three museum shows, and we have them lined up till 2023. We used to have to go out looking for them, and now
they're coming to you.
The museums are coming to us and asking if they can have a show.
Is this organization a local organization?
Oh, no, it's national.
Oh, I see.
It's actually North America national because it's artists from Canada and Mexico.
Oh, my goodness sakes, this is a big stretch.
It is.
So you've changed the tide.
Yes, isn't that great?
I love your smile. great accomplishment.
It is. Well, I certainly can't take credit for it single-handedly, but I love being a part of it.
What was that your – how did you get into that position? Were you asked or did you volunteer? Did you step up and wave your hand and said, hey?
No, I was asked. It was the former president, Kathy Waste, I had – purchased one of her paintings. I saw it in a magazine, and I contacted the gallery, and they said, oh, she's a California artist. And, well, I'm in California. So they said, oh, she's in Sacramento. Oh, I'm in Sacramento.
Oh.
So I got to know her, came over to her studio, purchased one of her artworks. And as a president of American Women Artists, she made it her goal to diversify the board, which had been, prior to her coming on board, all female artists. Mm-hmm. She decided, because she's a great left-brain, right-brain person, she decided to have the board become more diversified. And at the time that she contacted me, and she wanted me on the board because of my background in editing, my knowledge of female artists.
Mm-hmm.
She also brought on an accountant, and there we were.
And that was it?
Yes, and I've been on the board ever since.
Oh my! And that's been for how long?
It's about 4 years now.
Okay, so you're still going strong.
Oh, yes.
Alita, we have to take another break. So if you're just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. We're totally listener-supported, and my guest today is Alita Carpenter, and we are going to be right back. Don't go too far. Welcome back. This is Henry Cuenca with my guest, Alita Carpenter. Alita, we're talking about art, and you seem to have gone full board in trying to working towards more recognition of women's artistic works. Where did this art seed start with you? Was this something that you learned from your mother?
How did you know?
Oh, my goodness.
My mother, as I told you, was an extraordinary woman. She was a concert violinist. She was also a fiddle player, and wound up performing with local legend Merle Haggard when
yes,
he performed.
Really?
Yes. But she...
So how old... This is a big deal.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think it's a big deal. So how old was she when she was invited to play with Merle?
I don't think she'd want that known.
Oh, I like that answer. I like that answer.
Probably in her 50s, I'd say.
So she was quite accomplished.
Oh, she was amazing. But that's where my interest in art began, with my mother. I remember when I was just a little girl, and we didn't have much money, and I wanted some paper dolls, and she just drew them for me. And drew me a paper doll, drew all these clothes that I could color. Very artistic. And we moved into a house in Anderson, I think it was the first place we lived in. And she decided the kitchen was boring, so she freehand painted the entire kitchen with Pennsylvania Dutch designs. She was amazing.
It wouldn't still be there, would it?
No. The next owners painted over it.
My goodness. Your mother appears to have been a major influence in your life. Now,
major.
Your life growing up was not a cradle life, many would think. Your father was an alcoholic. You went to live with your aunt. Your mother was quite ill.
No, I was ill.
You were ill.
I had tuberculosis. My grandmother had been misdiagnosed. And she actually died of tuberculosis, but I contracted it from her when I was an infant.
Tell us about that.
Well, obviously, I don't remember it personally, but this would have been, well, I was born in 1946, so that's probably when I would have caught it, because it was when I was still in L.A., and my parents moved to New Mexico, to Albuquerque, and the hot, dry climate arrested it. This was way before they had antibiotics like they have now.
Sure. Oh, sure.
So it's been, essentially in remission for my entire life. In fact, I when I was tested at one point for allergies, my lung capacity is something like 120% of normal. So obviously it hasn't had that much of an effect on my health.
It's, and you're a runner too, right?
I am, yes. The only effect it's ever had is that the skin tests that they give you in school come out positive. Mm-hmm. So I always had to have a letter from the doctor on file. Mm-hmm. But
tell us, share with us your childhood life. I mean, you were separated from your mother.
Well, my mother married our biological father, my sister and I. My sister was born in New Mexico when we were there. My mother, there were several events that occurred that made my mother decide that she just couldn't go on living with this man. Mm-hmm. And so she wanted to get her life together and file for divorce. And so my Aunt Rayma, her older sister, came from L.A. on the train and picked me up and took me back to L.A. to stay with her. My sister Lindy was just 6 months old at that time. Mm-hmm. So I would have been about two. Mm-hmm. And
you have no recollection, of course.
No, yeah. No, only photographs that are sort of my memory, I guess. Right. And so I stayed with my Aunt Rayma for a year or two at least. Well,
do you remember that part of your life?
Flashes. Mm-hmm. Flashes of it. My Aunt Rayma's Cocker Spaniels. The palm trees in Southern California, things like that. Dropping a coffee can full of wet sand on my toe, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how we recall certain segments of our life, right?
Well, that was traumatic.
Being chased by a rooster.
Being chased by a rooster.
How could anybody forget that?
Oh, that was very traumatic.
So, from looking back on this, your childhood experience of not growing up with your aunt, large part of your life with your aunt, your mother must have felt really separated with you.
Well, it was really interesting because I obviously don't have much memory of that. And,
sure.
And my aunt was, she was family. I was used to her.
Well, sure.
And it felt very comfortable. But at a later point in my life when I was experiencing stress, and I was talking to a counselor about it, and she asked about about separation, about abandonment, and I said no, I didn't have any of that in my life. And I asked my mother about it, and she said, oh yes, I abandoned you. And it was obvious that was her view of what had transpired.
So she didn't feel comfortable with it.
She was devastated that it had to happen, but mm-hmm. it was something that she felt, in order to take care of me,
sure,
she'd had to do.
Well, that's understandable, right?
I mean, right. Of course.
But your mother taught you some really good value system.
She did. She was so extraordinary. She was always curious, mm-hmm. and she would say, why do you think the leaves on that tree are that color and the ones on this tree are this color? And she would ask us these questions, and we would have to think about it. And she would point things out to us. And she would say, well, do you think? And so we'd have to come up with answers. And she
would keep your mind moving.
She kept our mind moving, and she was very open-minded about everything. Oh, well, if you can't prove it, it might be possible. And so that was how we grew up. We didn't have preconceptions about things. Mm-hmm. It could be possible.
And she taught you about the California missions?
Oh, yes. Well, not just the California missions, California history. I've always been fascinated by the other, cultures other than mine, people who look different from me. As you know from my degree, I have a master's and an undergrad.
Correct.
In communication studies with an emphasis on intercultural aspects. And she told us, of course, about that California was part of Mexico and mm-hmm. all the way up here. Well, of course we should learn Spanish. I mean, Spanish should have been our first language. And so that's that's just always been a part of my thinking. I've been pro-Mexico forever.
Is that why you give out Mexican recipes?
Only to those who ask. And believe me, there are a lot who ask. I just mentioned making frijoles borrachos over the weekend, and everyone wanted my recipe.
Oh, my goodness sake. Well, your mother was quite a musician. I mean, she won an acclaim throughout the country. She was seventh in the country in
Fiddle playing. Right. They have competitions.
That's a remarkable thing to accomplish.
It is.
She was how old at that time? Was she a youngster when she won that?
Do you know what's really... Oh, God, no. She didn't start doing fiddle music until she was probably in her 40s, maybe.
I see.
It's so funny. You know, people ask me thing about ages. Age is so irrelevant to me. It's always been irrelevant my whole life. I don't affix an age to accomplishments.
Well, that's probably a good way to look at things. So, what does age have to do with anything?
It really
is today and tomorrow, right?
Well, yes.
You know, what do I get done today? What else? What would you say the most dominant things that you learned from your parents?
From my parents? Mm-hmm. Well, you've already heard what I learned from my mother. I think that the main thing that my mother gave us was just by actions that you don't have to feel limited, either by your gender, your size, by public perception, by societal mores. Mm-hmm. I think that that's what she contributed. Daddy, not my biological father.
Right.
He was never part of my life. But Daddy, very affectionate, very loving, and I think that he gave us the ability to show affection for others, to be demonstrative without feeling self-conscious about it.
Mm-hmm. So was your mother educated?
She went to a community college. Mm-hmm. Both my parents are very bright.
Mm-hmm. Well, it had to come from somewhere.
I guess so.
I mean, skipping kindergarten and third grade, my goodness, second grade.
Oh, well.
So you obviously learned these abilities, and that you were given some intellectual capacity at a very young age.
I was very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. What strikes me really very fascinating, and I'm sure you're not the only one in the world, but to me it's an enormous accomplishment to go to school at age 49 or 50 and work through 3-4 years of educating yourself and end up with bachelor's and master's degrees at that age. The energy clock starts to work backwards about that age.
It was a challenge that I embraced. It was so interesting because as a kid, I'd been told by, you know, my parents, by school teachers, by people who knew me, that I wasn't living up to my potential. And I never really knew what my potential was. What do they mean? Where am I lacking? What should I be doing? So when I went back to school at a later stage and started learning, and I loved all of these classes, started learning so much and doing so well. Here is a grade. I'm getting nothing but 100%. This must be what they're talking about. Because I had to apply myself more at that stage of my life than I'd ever had to mm-hmm. in high school. And I felt I was meeting the challenge. I had been given a yardstick as to what my potential was, and I was meeting it.
So that the idea of a potential manifested itself in your works.
It did. And I loved going back to school later. It was interesting because if you go through life as I did with curiosity, it's like, why is Thule fog different from coastal fog? oh, here's a class. I can take a class on this. And so all of my unanswered questions could be, I had a context for what I was learning, whereas younger people in these classes perhaps didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is very striking and very obvious to me as you're explaining this to me that by your mother throwing up questions of consideration, Thule fog or regular fog, I can see where those types of questions could set a course for you of looking at other things with a little bit of more discretion than maybe a lot of people.
I think it's the whole questioning aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering. I mean, I love Google these days, but we didn't have Google when I was a kid. But it's so great that I can just ask a question and have it answered because I still have questions about everything.
It's absolutely amazing.
Isn't it, though?
Alita, we have to take another break. So we're going to be right back. If you're just tuning in again, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio. And, of course, I am Henry Cuenca, and my guest today is Alita Carpenter. And we're going to take a real quick break, and we're going to be back real quick. Thank you. Alita, we're coming. We have a few more minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes on the show. What really excites you?
Travel, learning.
Still.
Oh,
the bug to learn. You say Google doesn't answer everything, but pretty much everything. So give me an example of your most recent quest of learning something that... You know, it could be anything. My guess is you're always on the search for something.
Well, I am. I can't think of anything that I've had to...
Quickly, right.
Yeah.
You know, I saw on Jeopardy, I don't know if you watched the program, but they have a computer that is... they have a computer that basically can answer anything. They've fed the computer with...
Wow.
Millions of bits of data, and it's like the human brain. And a takeoff on that is that they can convert that to some sort of technology where your brain hooks up to this mammoth computer. So you can think about anything, and the answers are right there. They come right to you.
Can I get one? I would love that.
Actually, quite honestly, I thought you were probably part of that computer.
I wish. Wow, that sounds fascinating. Yes.
I mean, that puts absolutely everything conceivable, whether it's right or wrong, you know, but puts knowledge just instantly in your brain by just thinking about a question.
Wow.
Or what I would like to know.
Wow. I would love that.
Isn't that absolutely just amazing?
It is.
And you think where we're going to be 5, 10, 15 years from now?
I thought of something that made me curious. I went to visit my granddaughter, Cassandra, who lives in New Zealand now. Mm-hmm. She married an attorney from New Zealand, and since it just made more sense for her to move there rather than him to move to California, she lives there now. And so I was curious about New Zealand because they refer to Maoris as the original New Zealanders, but they weren't from New Zealand. They're Pacific Islanders who somehow found their way down to New Zealand. So I became very curious about the Maoris and how they got there. It's actually, New Zealand is just such a fascinating country.
So you've been there?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Went to visit her and had a wonderful time exploring the country and did a cruise all the way around it and spent time with her. Just different things spark my interest as far as travel.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a aha moment during your life, a moment of great dimension of knowledge, epiphany, something that just struck you as like, I got it? You don't have to have had one.
No, I did have one, and this, I just don't talk about it very often.
Oh, you care sharing with us?
I'll share it with you. Okay. When I was married, a very early stage of my life, of my adult life, I think I was 21, and living in Sacramento, and new to the area, didn't know that many people, and fairly dependent on my then husband and his friends for social life. I had a few friends that I'd made at work, but he would disappear. He would take my car and disappear, and I was basically stuck in this town where I knew no one. I had no transportation to go anywhere. I'd left my family and support group up in Shasta County, and this happened over and over and over, and I became very, very depressed and actually suicidal. Mm. One of my new friends that I worked with happened to call me, and I was just sobbing. I was incoherent, and she said, "Kid, I'll be right over." She and her husband came over and got me and took me to the hospital, checked me into the psychiatric ward, and I spent the weekend there. And I talked to a psychiatrist, and I told her, you know, I need to sleep. This has happened. I explained everything. I spent the weekend, and I looked at the people who were in the psychiatric ward with me, and I thought, these people have problems. You allowed a man to do this to you. You permitted yourself, your feelings, to be dictated by another person's actions. And I came out of there whole and stronger and determined that this would never happen again.
My goodness sakes.
It was definitely a turning point in my life. It made me realize that I'm in charge of my reactions.
Mm-hmm. Which is the truth. We are all accountable for our own experiences, own deeds.
It's not that someone did this to you. It's that
you allowed it.
Uh-huh. And that was probably the greatest thing that I've ever learned.
Isn't
and it was early in my life, so I could utilize that knowledge for the rest of my life.
And that stands by you even today.
Oh, yes.
Right. You're a very strong lady, and certainly I can see where that would be a real, real defining point in anybody's life.
It was, and I was 21.
She's perfect age.
So that was, 50 years ago?
You're revealing your age again.
I am. I don't mind revealing it.
what a beautiful experience that was. You have brothers and sisters.
I do. Mm-hmm. I have two beautiful sisters, and I have a brother who's extremely talented, also a musician like our mother.
Did they pick up many of your traits?
No. The sister that's the second sister from me is very similar. Mm-hmm. We're the same size. We both play the piano. We share political beliefs, and I'd say we're more alike than I am with the other two.
If you were to look back on your life, what would you do differently? What would you have done differently?
I would probably have gone to college right out of high school and stuck with it.
Beyond a master's degree? Or?
No, I mean right out of high school. Uh-huh. I would have, I don't know what I would have done, but I would have gone immediately to college and finished with at least a bachelor's degree. Uh-huh. But then I might not have had the amazing life that I've had.
Well, that's what I was just thinking.
I cannot change. I mean, just imagining a change in my life would affect everything, and it's been such an extraordinary life. Uh-huh. I mean, I've done things and gone places and met people that would be in a storybook. And I'm so grateful.
Have you thought of authoring a book, writing a book?
I've had a lot of people suggest that to me, and my usual response is, "Oh, there are a few more legislators who need to die before I can write about those experiences."
What advice could you give our listeners? What is it that you have learned that's most prominent in your mind that you could share with men and women?
Well, we just finished talking about that you are in control mm-hmm. of your life. You can make of your life what you want to make of it. And never underestimate a woman.
do people still underestimate women?
Oh, I'm sure they do. I mean, they did me for years and years. But
society has changed so much.
Oh, I think so. I think so.
I never doubt. I look at a female like the very same way as I look at a male. They're a person, mm-hmm. right?
Good for
you. I mean, I don't sell anybody short. Females got nothing to do with it.
No. Well, things have changed.
So we are changing.
Yes, I think so. Right. Not quite enough. I'm still marching.
What is your vision for the future?
I would love to see equality or equity in all walks of life. You know, like I was telling you about women in art. People aren't even aware of that. But as soon as they become aware of it, mm-hmm. it's like a revelation. Wow, women mm-hmm. artists have also been undervalued in our society. Mm-hmm. There's just so much that women contribute that they aren't given credit for.
Mm-hmm. Society is pretty slow in changing, but it is changing very quickly.
It is.
And what's in your bucket list that remains in your bucket list that you would like to accomplish?
I have granddaughters.
You have how many granddaughters?
Well, my son has two daughters, and those are my most immediate and youngest grandchildren. And mm-hmm. then I have, let me do the counting. I have 13 grandchildren.
Oh, my goodness.
About half of which are female. Uh-huh. And I love to see their accomplishments.
Well, I hope that they do accomplish. And if they spend much time with you, they are going to learn a lot from you. Alita, it's been a real pleasure having you on my show.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
And I know that our listeners are going to really enjoy your session. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Henry.
You have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5 FM radio. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener supporter, go to our website at kkrn.org and click on the donate button, or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. You can call 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio or learn more. Think about it. We can use your help. Thank you for listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, where we are in earnest working to make our community and our world a better place. Please tune in to my show each first and third Tuesday of each month at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Here you will listen to another triumphant human story. I would love to hear from you, so please send me an email at henry@kkrn.org or call me directly at 530-356-9811. And I thank you for listening.